Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Issues in 30 days on New York, New Jersey election series. Issue 9, affordable housing in New York City, and we'll get to it in a minute. This is part of our week-long focus on development issues in New York City. Next week, we will have a week-long focus on development issues in New Jersey as they relate to the governor's race. We'll be talking to the New York City Democratic mayoral nominee, William Thompson, during this segment in just a minute. But we're doing a week on development issues, which are always of such overwhelming interest to so many of you, for New York, and a week for New Jersey development issues at a time when development is so much in the news and so much on many of your minds. We've had so much response over the last few months, for example, to our halted development map, where we've invited you to go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr's show and show us where the construction projects are that have stopped. Show us where the vacant condos are after the luxury high-rises have been completed. There are some movements among various politicians to get them turned into affordable housing. We'll ask our guests about that. And we have a wiki for you to help us produce this series, because we've done so much open source stuff on development around the New York area and, of course, our ongoing Uncommon Economic Indicators project, which often winds up interacting and intersecting with development issues and land use issues around our area. So we set up a wiki to continue the two-way conversation. This is not just us producing election coverage to spit out at you. This is a participatory two-way street, just like we did for the presidential election last year. So you're invited to go to our wiki at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr's show, and you'll see that we invite you to post questions for some of these segments, subtopics for some of these segments on developments, audio bites that we might use, sound bites, guests, research materials, because we see election coverage as an opportunity for us to get together in New York City with respect to the mayor's race, almost being an excuse, get together in New Jersey with the governor's race, almost being an excuse to kind of take stock of where we are and ask ourselves, what are the big issues in our area right now? That's why we had you nominate issues for 30 issues in 30 days, vote on issues for 30 issues in 30 days. So now we take the next step this year and invite you to post particular producer tips. You produce this segment along with our paid professionals. Questions and audio bites and research materials and guest suggestions and everything else. So there you go. Okay. William Thompson, the Democratic mayoral nominee, is going to be here in 1 minute. We're going to take a phone call from Doug first, however, who is calling, I believe, from... Yes, okay. You know what we're going to do? Let me put Jared Murphy on for a minute, investigations editor for City Limits, and he's going to be back later in the hour to talk about the Bloomberg record. Jared, going into our interview with Democratic mayoral candidate Bill Thompson, what do you want to know? What do you think are the big differences with respect to affordable housing between Bloomberg and Thompson going in, or how many open questions do you have?
Well, I think the big question, Brian, and good morning, is that, numbers and who's going to get the housing. I mean, Thompson has called Bloomberg's housing record a failure. I think there's a lot to examine in that claim. I think the big question, though, is if Thompson were elected, does he intend to build more housing and how he'll pay for it? And the big question is to which income groups that housing goes. And that's one of the big tensions within the Bloomberg plan, is deciding whether it makes sense to have affordable housing for people who are purely low income or for folks who are sort of in the moderate ranges. There are a lot of different ways to slice the apple. So I think those would be the big questions on my mind.
How does the Bloomberg plan slice that apple?
The Bloomberg plan, you know, which is for 165,000 units over 11 years, devotes 68% of them, or plans to devote 68% of them to people who are low income, and then about another 20% to people who are sort of in the moderate ranges, and then, you know, there is a small slice for people who, you know, depending on their family size, might have incomes even in the six figures, low six figures. And, you know, that is a deliberate choice to try to provide affordable housing to people who are in different ranges, but it has been a source of tension between the administration and housing advocates in terms of how much is going to low income. I will say, though, that 2 years ago, which is the most recent numbers we have, HPD, which is the city's housing department, told us that they had, in fact, so far under the mayor's plan, targeted more housing than they expected to low-income people. And they expected those numbers to eventually kind of resolve to around the targets. But so far, anyway, low-income folks were receiving more housing than had been planned.
All right. We'll come back to you and look more at the Bloomberg record in a few minutes. Jared Murphy, investigations editor for City Limits magazine. And now we do have the Democratic nominee, Democratic mayoral candidate, and current New York City controller, William Thompson. Controller Thompson, welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. And first, on the mayor's record, he says the massive rezoning of New York, which we did a separate segment on the other day, to allow private sector housing construction, is one of his proudest accomplishments. Listen to that clip.
The rezoning of this city will probably be the thing that has as much impact on the future of our city as the improvements in education.
So what's your reaction to the mayor's claim of that as a pinnacle accomplishment and to the massive rezoning of the city in general under his watch?
Well, I think if you look people all across the city of New York and just ask them the question, is it easier or cheaper for them to live in the city of New York? Is it easier to find housing? Is it easier to find more affordable housing for middle-income New Yorkers, moderate or low-income New Yorkers? I think everybody would say no. It has gotten harder and tougher, and people are being pushed out of the neighborhoods that they live in each and every day. So if that is the centerpiece and the thing that he is the proudest of, I suggest he talk to the people of New York City who are finding it tougher and harder to live here each and every day.
The mayor says he's doing this rezoning because if we'll really have a million more people by 2030, as his office projects, then the private sector needs to be empowered by this to build lots and lots of housing so we don't have a shortage that pushes up prices even more. How much do you disagree with that?
Well, what we're seeing is a lot more luxury housing being built in the city of New York. I don't think we're seeing affordable housing being built. And when I talk about affordable, I think, you know, I'm talking about middle-income, moderate, and low-income housing. We are not seeing middle-income housing being built across the city of New York. So the changes in zoning, the rezonings that he has helped to lead across the city of New York have not led to more middle-income housing being built. And if there's going to be a million more people who live here in 2030, those people are going to have to make huge salaries to be able to live here because we are not building more affordable housing here in New York City.
Listeners, your affordable housing questions for Democratic mayoral candidate Bill Thompson, 212-433-WNYC, as we give you access to the candidate, 212-433-9692. We should mention that we invited Mayor Bloomberg to come on also and talk specifically about housing. He declined and his campaign declined to provide us anybody today.
I mean, if Brian, if you look at some of the opportunities that have been presented to the city of New York to make statements and things to get involved in, you look at the sale of Stuytown and Peter Cooper Village that the city ran away from and declined to get involved in that at all. You look at Starrett City, where a number of people got involved in that. I think the city of New York took a real backseat in that. There have been opportunities to make statements and get involved and send a strong message out to, you know, to across the country that New York City does believe in affordable housing and middle-income housing, and it hasn't happened.
Did you oppose the sale of Stuytown to Tishman Speyer at the time?
I tried to get involved and was involved with the tenants and tried to help involve our pension funds in the tenant buyout of that.
You are proposing, I see on your website, a 21st century Mitchell-Lama program. Want to tell us about that?
Well, I think that as we looked at the late 50s and 60s, tens of thousands of units of housing were being built under the Mitchell-Lama program across the city of New York. It led to moderate and middle-income housing being built in neighborhoods all across the city of New York. Over the last five, 6 years, you know, I probably was one of the first to talk about the problems that were being experienced there as housing developments and owners came out of the Mitchell-Lama program after the 25 or 30 years that they were there. I think it's important that we look to build new housing under a new Mitchell-Lama program, under a 21st century program. We've got to, I mean, when we talk about housing, it is at a crisis proportion in the city of New York these days. Just ask anyone, I mean, and watch how much people are spending, how much of their income they're spending on rent or shelter. I think we need to get back in the business again of creating the incentives for developers to build middle-income housing. And that's why I talk about a 21st century Mitchell-Lama program. I think that that needs to be a major focus of this city and make that a major focus right now.
So what are the incentives? Because if I'm a developer, I might look around and say, well, I don't want to invest in new buildings where my rent is going to be controlled by the government.
You know, something in return for lower cost money and lower cost mortgages, in return for tax breaks, and in return for perhaps for zoning change. All of those things together make it a lot, you know, very attractive for a builder to say, wait a minute, if I keep my rents within a certain limit over the 25 or 30 year or even longer, because I think that's one of the things that we've got to look at. Well, geez, then maybe it does make sense. Maybe I won't make the same profit margin I do on luxury housing, but you know something? Geez, I won't do bad. And I think those are some of the things that we have to look at, providing cheaper money, providing zoning breaks, providing tax breaks for builders to build housing that people can afford to live in.
So how many units do you foresee in a Thompson administration, and what will that cost the taxpayers?
Well, you know something, the question is, if we have more people who can afford to live in the city of New York, it improves and helps the tax base. If we're not pushing middle-income New Yorkers out, that helps the New York City tax base. So when, you know, how many units? I don't have an exact number on that, because I think that what we need to do is to sit down, come up with the program, and then see how many units we can, you know, sit down with the private sector, with the nonprofit sector, with the banks, with our legislators.
Because the mayor has a big number, which is 165,000 that he promised in 2005 by the year 2013. He says he'll need one more year from that as an extension given the economy. But by 2014, he'll have 165,000 additional affordable housing units. Do you question that?
I think everybody does. And I think it's the same thing as saying, geez, you know, we're going to provide, I'm not sure, is it now the new number, is it 250,000 or 400,000 new jobs in the city of New York? All of those things, you know, it's the five-borough economic plan that really, I think somebody termed it really the five-minute economic plan. These things don't happen. And I think that are there more affordable units, as the mayor talks about, in the city of New York? We're hemorrhaging units faster than we're building them.
But you wouldn't target a particular number? You wouldn't establish, because I think a few mayors in a row now, and Freddie Ferrer did it when he was running against Bloomberg in 2005. He came up with a big number, 100-something thousand, and the mayor upped it to 165. You wouldn't say, as mayor, I, Bill Thompson, will see that X number of affordable housing units are constructed or saved.
Brian, I think that the public's tired of, you know, the numbers game that never occurs. I think that, you know, getting things done for a change and pointing out the number of units, talking about housing as a crisis in the city of New York and starting to build tens of thousands of units and creating the opportunity for that to occur and then working along with those private developers and others to make sure it happens, that's what the public wants to see. I think they're tired of false promises. They want to see real action.
Doug in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC with William Thompson. Hello.
Hello, Brian. Hello, Mr. Thompson. We met at the Gay Pride Parade. I ran for the 33rd City Council, Doug Viviano.
How are you?
Good, good. I think you're 100% right, focusing on the Mitchell-Lama program, revisited, of course, in the 21st century. So many people I met and know feel like they won the lottery when they got in there. It was life-changing. But I want to ask you a broader question. You talk about affordable housing as a crisis, and I used to talk about it on the campaign trail in conjunction with healthcare as both a hidden crisis that I call the hidden Katrina.
Doug, what's your question?
So my question is, can you talk about them together, because there's no income left for these people who can't afford housing. They can't afford healthcare.
All right, he's steering you into a healthcare discussion here, which I don't really want to have today. Maybe you'll come back and talk about healthcare another day. But do you need to solve healthcare in order to solve affordable housing?
I think that separate issues. I think, but it's the same. Is healthcare and the need for healthcare and really looking at the disparities in healthcare, is that important? Yes, it is. At the same point, I would say they're not necessarily tied together.
Lisa in Rosedale in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I just wanted the definition of the low income and middle income, because I remember Bloomberg stating that low income people qualify low income as like 60,000.
Well, I think that, you know, you need to be a bit careful. There are definitions that will start to lay out of average median income. I think one of the things that, you know, that's affordable, and if you start to look at lower, if you start to look at, you know, what would be considered lower income housing, somebody making $20,000 a year, you know, I think everybody understands that that's not a lot of money these days. We need to provide housing for people like that. At the same point, when you look at, say, two city workers, a teacher and a fireman, who are married, who are making between the two of them a little more than $100,000, they're having a hard time living in the city of New York also, and we need to provide housing for them. So I would say that, you know, as we start to talk about the labels, low, moderate, middle-income housing, we need to build housing across a wide spectrum.
Right, and but would you be promising any particular ratios that of whatever units you are able to create, X percent of them would be, you know, targeted for people making under 40,000 and X percent for people making under 80,000 or however you slice it?
You know, I think that you want to build housing across that spectrum. I don't know that you want to say 20% will be here, 40% will be here, and 40% will be here. I do know that, you know, it takes obviously a lot more subsidy to build lower income housing. And while we need to create focus there, we need to create, and that's why I talk about creating the incentives to build middle and moderate income housing. And that really is something we need to do to keep middle class New Yorkers in the city of New York. At the same point, as we also talk about affordable housing, we've watched the housing authority and housing authority developments deteriorate across the city of New York. Another huge place where we have affordable housing units, public housing, and the city really has taken a step back from supporting that also, and the city needs to focus in that area also. We're looking at, I guess, 180,000 families who are in public housing and the housing authority. We need to focus on that.
Would you expand public housing? A lot of people consider actual government-run, government-built public housing a relic of the past, and while we would maintain what New York City already has, you don't build more. What do you think?
Well, I think that you really haven't seen a lot of construction there for a number of reasons. But one of the things that you have, that the Housing Authority does have, is a very valuable commodity in the city of New York, and that's land. And we really haven't looked to expand on that. I mean, one of the things that I think the mayor should be doing, and one of the things as mayor I would do, is, you know, the mayor has helped, at least past mayors, have helped to lead an urban agenda in a lot of ways. We have a president in the White House right now who understands the value of public housing. It's time to get the federal government back in the housing authority, back in the public housing game again.
New construction? Does that mean new construction?
That means new construction. That absolutely means new construction.
Ephraim in Gravesend. You're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Mr. Thompson.
How are you?
I happen to be from the paradise of public housing, which is the former Soviet Union. And here, I cannot afford the house on Beverly Hills. I cannot afford a house in downtown Manhattan, but it's fine. I don't understand why government would step in the real estate market, which is fine without intervention. If there are people who are poor, government can subsidize them. But if we want the model of the Soviet Union public housing, just good luck. I don't understand this concept of affordable housing.
Controller Thompson.
Well, I think that as we look, government does have a role in creation of housing and trying to spur additional housing to be created. It may not do it in some places directly, but we create the tools for builders to be able to do that across the city of New York and to build housing, because Because if not, what we are going to see is, you know, a city that where the middle class and moderate income New Yorkers continue to be pushed out. I think we're all aware. I mean, you know, it's the woman that I ran into on Election Day back on the 15th of September, and she said, geez, you know, I'd love to vote for you. I followed your career. And she was working in downtown Brooklyn. She says, but, you know, I live in the Poconos now because I can't afford to live in the city of New York. And I think we hear that more and more and more from people all across the city. They can't afford to live here anymore. So I believe it is important that government creates the opportunity for buildings, for housing to be built that where people can afford to live in this city.
I guess it goes to the 421A program, which mandates that new construction in certain wealthier neighborhoods have a certain amount of affordable units. And I guess Ephraim would say, well, I don't have the right to live in Beverly Hills. I don't have the right to live on Park Avenue. Why should you hold developers down from building what the market will bear in a particular neighborhood and build the more affordable units elsewhere?
But the reality is, if I'm saying to that developer, you are getting a tax break, and that's what the 421A program was. And I come up with some recommendations for a very different 421A program. What you were seeing is tax certificates that were being provided by that developer, so he'd build a luxury development in the middle of Manhattan, and people of different income levels couldn't live there, and yet he'd do tax certificates which were being used in the Bronx or in parts of Brooklyn or other places. Why are we creating this income segregation? If you're going to give you a tax break to be able to build something, why wouldn't I say that you have to do it at least on site or in that neighborhood? So we don't see that continued, you know, segregation of income based on certain locations. So if you're going to receive a tax break from the city of New York so that you can go out and sell and do luxury housing, why shouldn't I say that a portion of that has to be done so it's affordable? I think that makes sense. I think that that's government saying you're receiving a benefit. In return for that benefit, here's what you need to do. I don't have a problem with that.
Democratic mayoral candidate William Thompson, my guest, as we talk about affordable housing as issue 9 in our 30 issues in 30 days New York, New Jersey election series. I know we're over time. Do you have 5 more minutes for me by any chance?
I can say 3 more, Brian.
Okay,
definitely.
3 more, real quick. We did a segment yesterday all about Atlantic Yards. That was our issue 8. Do you differ with the mayor at all at this point on what should happen next at Atlantic Yards?
Well, I had supported maybe not the mayor's original plan at Atlantic Yards, but I had supported Atlantic Yards for 2 reasons. The large number of affordable units that were supposed to happen there, and the community benefits agreement that also was happening at Atlantic Yards. And over a period of time, I'm not going to say that I haven't been concerned at the constant changes in Atlantic Yards. I still have a number of questions and continue to pay attention and monitor that, because that project continues to change and morph. And I have to tell you, it continues to raise concern with me.
So we have a number of people asking on our comments page, Do you believe the housing promises in the community benefits agreement?
If those promises aren't met, then the city of New York should walk away from this. If the promises that were made about affordable units aren't done, then New York City needs to say goodbye to Atlantic Yards.
Is that a different position than the mayor?
I think it's a very different position than the mayor.
And last thing, WNYC's Lisa Chow did a profile of you yesterday. I want to replay one of your exchanges with her and see if you want to revise your answer.
Mm-hmm. Your career spans 30-some years. Can you tell me what you think are your top 3 accomplishments?
There's a long pause.
I'm going to point out to 2 at the Board of Education. Bringing educational focus to an institution that nobody thought that would happen. Changing the governance structure. And I think that the deputy borough president in Brooklyn, coming in at a time where Brooklyn was viewed as being on the decline, and being able to be part of helping lead Brooklyn to a resurgence.
So we were surprised around here that there was nothing on your list of top 3 accomplishments from your last 8 years, your years as controller. Would you answer that any different right now?
I don't know that I would. I think that the last 8 years as comptroller, I've been, you know, proud of redefining the office. It is a different office now than it was 8 years ago. I think that as you looked at and listened to candidates who ran to be comptroller of the city of New York, they all talked about doing the job the way Bill Thompson did the job, because I changed the focus, made that an office that fought for New Yorkers each and every day. That isn't just one accomplishment. That's 8 years of accomplishments and 8 years of hard work and focus. So were there things that I did as comptroller that I'm proud of? Sure. Getting, you know, major corporations out of supporting nations that, you know, that are doing business or that are terrorist nations, changing and investing in minority businesses that New York City right now is probably, at least on the pension side and on the investment side, is one of the best in the country. I'm very proud of that. Using the office of comptroller to fight for the people of New York City, very proud of that also. Those are more, as I said, it was, you know, going back over history, I think at the Board of Education, changing the governance structure and getting out of a decentralized school system that existed for decades and bringing it forward and moving it into an institution that was focused on children and education, I'm very proud of that.
Wasn't that change in the governance structure under Mayor Bloomberg, not when you were president of the Board of Ed in the 90s?
No, that was under me. If you go back 1990s, as a matter of fact, I became president of the New York City Board of Education in the middle of 96. By the end of 96, I led that change that re-centralized the school system and pushed decentralization to the side. So, no, that was under me. Mike Bloomberg wasn't involved in education and wasn't focused on education back then.
New York City Comptroller and Democratic mayoral candidate William Thompson, thank you very much for coming on with us.
Good talking to you.
To talk primarily about affordable housing. We will compare some of what he said to the mayor's record and mayor's positions with Jared Murphy from City Limits for a few minutes after break. And then we're going to go live to China and talk to two people where Communist China is celebrating its 60th birthday today, even as it turns into Capitalist China. We will ask exactly what they are celebrating today. Stay tuned.